Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment. My name is Ali Rizvi, and with me is Armin Navabi. Armin, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I am good. I'm fascinated by what's happening in Israel, or what's actually happened in Israel. So this is going to be so that's what this episode's about. After 12-year reign, 12 years of rule, winning often like slim majorities and, you know, doing a lot of things to kind of stay in power, Benjamin Netanyahu was out. He was ousted by, and what he was ousted by, the way he was ousted is really interesting. So he's been ousted by a very, very unlikely and kind of unpredictable coalition, right? And a coalition made up of eight parties that is actually quite fragile. It consists of parties that are far left, that are far right, that are secular, that are religious, includes like a sort of far right Jewish party, includes an Arab Islamist party, not just a regular Arab secular party, but, and you know, a political Islamic party that's also part of it. So it's a very fragile coalition, but it's also extremely diverse. So the question is it teetering on the edge? Is it going to work? It seems like it's been motivated more by an anti-Netanyahu drive rather than a pro whatever drive. We don't even know what it's pro because this is so diverse. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about right now and see, you know, what the potential is right now. The current prime minister is Naftali Bennett. He was a former aide to Netanyahu, who's actually considered to be on even further right of Netanyahu. But now he's there and he's agreed to share power with an ideologically very different candidate who I just looked up the pronunciation before we started the show. Yair Lapid. Is that right, Armin? Did I get it right?
Yeah, Lapid. I don't bother with their first names. It's Lapid, but the other guy is the more important one.
Yeah, Naftali Bennett, because Lapid has decided he's agreed to let Naftali Bennett go first, which means that he's going to have some influence. He's going to be able to cement his whatever influence like in the first 2 years.
There might not be time for a second. That's why it was so key for him to go first. With the very few little seats that he have, it's so amazing that he managed to become president. I think this is historic this is the first time in the history of Israel. I know it is in so many ways, but it's historic and new for in so many ways. But the one that I'm pointing out right now is the fact that somebody that represents a party with so little seats is actually being prime minister. Like the guy, how much Likud has? 30 right now, right? This guy has, Bennett has 6. Can somebody check the numbers if I remember correctly?
Yeah.
Like Bennett has 6. I think Likud has 30. I'm going to double check to see if that's right. And the guy with 6 seats as prime minister and the guy with 30 seats. By the way, don't let this fool anybody. Likud is still extremely influential, right? Like Likud is still the biggest party. The reason why it was such a, you know, difficult thing to do to get Netanyahu out, like all these parties had to get together because Likud is such a powerful party, and Likud is still a powerful party, right? And here's another interesting thing, okay? Likud could be in power like this, could have been in power like this if they didn't have Netanyahu. Like the objection that all these parties have that they got together to get to unseat Netanyahu was not to Likud. Like half of Israel is not united against Likud. Half of Israel is united against Netanyahu. Yeah. So Netanyahu is not just a curse to Israel. Netanyahu is even a curse to Likud
itself.
His own
party.
Likud would be in power right now. They would be having the prime minister right now in power if it wasn't because Netanyahu was leading it. Like this corruption scandal, like once it goes, if it, I don't know, do you think he's going to get charged or anything? I can't tell, honestly.
I don't know. I can't really tell either. But I have no idea. But it seems like I'm going to, like, I know, Armin, you're not a huge fan of this guy, but I really like this observation that Thomas Friedman made. Okay, and aside from the whole Iranian thing, is that he wrote an article called "BB is Trump and the Israeli Change Coalition is Biden." All right, and I think that that's a really kind of interesting way to do it, because, you know, he's talking about how the Democratic Party, you know, you had these sort of leftists and the Squad, and you had these centrists, and it was sort of very fragmented, but they all came together because they really, really wanted to get rid of Trump. They're like, you know, we'd vote for a child's soiled diaper over Trump, and this is the thing with Netanyahu; he just brings this out. In everybody else, where, I mean, this Arab Islamic Party, and it's an Islamic party, like a definite,
it's a Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, it's basically, that's what it is, and it's religiously motivated and religio-politically motivated. But then he needed to form that alliance. They need to form that alliance because they need, I think, how many seats did they have? Like 4 seats. They needed those 4 seats to keep the coalition together.
So this comparison doesn't, by the way, it doesn't make any sense at all. First of all, because here's the interest, because we're talking about United States, we're talking about an established. So this is actually the differences are actually much more interesting than the similarities, right? Because in Israel, one thing so weird about Israel that like a lot of Americans can't relate to is the birth and destruction of parties once every week. All right. Mm-hmm. So like there are, so yeah, like Likud is different from a lot of these parties because it's like established party that is there long standing, right? Mm-hmm. But you have like the blue, we were not, like, one election, this party doesn't exist. And the next election, this is the party that we created last week. And now it's the greatest threat to Likud right now, right? So, and then next, and it doesn't work out. Next election, what happened to that party that was the greatest threat to Likud? Oh, it's nothing now. They don't even have, like in this election, they become irrelevant, right? So, right. But a lot of Americans are used to, like, Republican, Democrat, two parties go head to head. Like, what is this, like, these new inventions of parties like once every weekend, right? Like I know I'm exaggerating, right? But it just seems like that to a lot of people looking from outside, right? That like it's just like so many different parties, this coalition building, like in United States, so like you don't do coalition building because you just understand you have Democrats and Republicans, right? But even among countries that do coalition building, like as Canadians, Ali, you're used to like not having majority governments or a couple of parties coming together to build a stronger coalition to be able to actually do stuff. You're used to that. But even so Americans, a lot of Americans, even the Canadian version is like, what the hell is happening here, right? But Israel, even compared to countries like Canada and United Kingdom, it's even more chaotic, right? It's even more chaotic because even like in countries like, you know, Canada or in United Kingdom, you know, there's like, you know, the parties, right? And it's just not like that one party that is strong in this election all of a sudden in the third election this year doesn't become so irrelevant, you know what I mean? It's just it's a lot of up and down, especially recently, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's another thing, like with these parliamentary systems, when you have multiple parties, you know, pluralities come into play, and pluralities are not necessarily they're not always representative of, you know, what's happening to the population. Like in Canada, you mentioned, you know, you've got one conservative party and you've got two liberal parties. You've got sort of the mainstream liberal party that's called the Liberal Party, and you've got the NDP, right, the New Democratic Party, and they split the liberal vote. And then that, like, if they didn't split it, it'd be a lot harder for conservatives to be able to get any power. So there is that element here, too, that a lot of times in these parliamentary systems, many of the dynamics, like the electoral dynamics, are really in opposition to one party rather than anything else. And that's why you need the coalitions, because if everybody else stays fragmented, then right, you have a party that has minority support with the population, but they have a plurality. And that's not necessarily what happened here. I mean, there are times when the Likud has had majorities, but they've always been very, very slim. So,
by the way, By the way, I just want people to understand. Let me just maybe cover the basics a little bit, right?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we know that. So Netanyahu is like the head of the Likud party right now, which is the most powerful political party in Israel with the highest number of seats. The parliament or the Knesset, right? Is that how you say it?
Knesset.
Has how many seats? 160?
I don't know the exact number of seats. So.
Knesset, Israel. How many seats? Was I right?
That's something along those lines.
120, yeah. Right. So no. When I say 60, because that's they need 61 seats to create a majority coalition, right? So let me see. Was I right about Likud? Likud, I was right. Likud had 29 seats. So I said 30. Okay. So Likud is the biggest party, right? Wow, that's a lot of.
Sorry, I'm gonna change my earphones.
Right, meet yourself. So yeah, there's no party that comes even close to Likud, right? So the fact that they're now the opposite. So now because Likud is not the government right now, so this coalition that they created is a mix of a couple of different parties, like eight different parties. That is now taking the government away from the Likud, and Likud becomes the opposition party. So Netanyahu, as head of Likud, is not gone away. Like people think, like he's been unseated, so like he's irrelevant. No, Netanyahu is now the head of the opposition to a coalition that is extremely fragile. Okay, and he's promising that it's so fragile that he's going to break it so fast, and he's going to come back. Right. The reason why it's so fragile, the reason why this coalition is fragile is that there's only one thing that brought all these parties together, and that's to unseat Netanyahu. And again, not to unseat Likud, right? That was not what united them. It was to get rid of Netanyahu, right? And the reason why these people are united against Netanyahu is because Netanyahu's corruption charges, guys, it's not like about Palestine, it's not about foreign policy, it's not about relationships with Iran, it's not about, there's no relationship, it's not about like war with Iran, it's not about relationships with the United States, it's not about any of that, it's about the fact that Netanyahu has corruption charges, make it so hard for him to govern, and people are like, we need to get rid of this guy. This guy is sacrificing the country as a way to stay in power, because the way that works in Israel is that if he's the prime minister, you can't really charge the man when he's the prime minister. So to a lot of people, it's very apparent that Netanyahu just wants to remain prime minister, not for the sake of Israel, but for the sake of these corruption charges not to come after him, right? And people are like, this man has taken our country hostage, and we need to save Israel, okay? So this coalition that was created, it was like people that do not see eye to eye on anything except that we need to save Israel from Netanyahu, right? So Bennett, which is the head of the party that doesn't have that many seats, but he's going to become the prime minister. What is his party called? Bennett's party?
I'll tell you. Hold on. It's called Yesh. No, that's the other guy.
Yamina?
Yeah, something like that.
Is it Yamina? Hold on. Yes, it's Yamina. Okay. So Yamina has six. I was right. He had six seats. Wow. How do I remember these things? Okay. So Yamina has six seats, right? And Yamina has six seats. And the guy who's in charge of it is Bennett. And Bennett is more far right than Netanyahu. Okay. He's more far right than Netanyahu. He's extremely racist, right? However, he's very anti-Arab, not just anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. He competes with Netanyahu in being anti-Arab, but Netanyahu thinks like he's a fake righty, because no righty person, no right-leaning person would make a coalition that has Arabs in that, right? So Netanyahu, but he can't say that, so he will highlight the fact that Bennett is making a coalition with left-leaning people, right? in this coalition. I think he's highlighting that more. I will tell you why he's not highlighting the fact that he's making a coalition with the Arabs. Because Netanyahu was trying to do that right before this. Okay, we're going to get to that. That's going to be so juicy.
No, but this, by the way, this has to be emphasized. Like actually sit down with an Arab Islamic party, like a Muslim Brotherhood type party, for somebody like that. I mean, that is unprecedented. That hasn't really happened.
Okay, so if you want to go there right now, let's go there.
Let's go there right now.
It's a big thing. Yeah, so Netanyahu is quoted many times to say some extremely racist things about Arabs, okay? And to make it seem like the Arabs who are Israeli citizens. We're not even talking about the Arabs who are just Palestinians, okay? We're talking Arabs with Israeli passports, treating them like they're the enemy within, okay?
Right before his elections. He's done that
right before his election. But even a worse history that a lot of people don't know. Ali, do you know Ishaq Rabin?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was the closest, among all the prime ministers, he's one of the closest people that was a force for peace. Like, he was really trying to bring peace between the Arabs and Jews and stop this conflict. And he was getting close, to be fair. He was getting very close. And one thing that he did was he got too close to the Arabs and for Netanyahu's taste. And you could call what at that time, this is like in the 1990s, right? I think
you could have the Nobel Prize then.
Yes, you could consider what Netanyahu said about what Ishaq Rabin is doing back then as incitement for, like, considering him an enemy of Israel because of his cooperation with Arabs, right? And this man was assassinated. Ishaq Rabin was assassinated by a right wing Israeli, okay? Yeah. And a far-right leaning Israeli, which is basically ended that chance for Israeli Palestinian peace. Like, that we were getting closer than ever before, and this assassination stopped that, right? And Netanyahu was one of the people who was inciting that kind of action against Ishaq Rabin back then. He would see Netanyahu was one of these people who would consider any cooperations with Arab as betrayal to Israel. But then he got to a place where he was so desperate to be in power, so desperate to remain prime minister, because if he gets unseated as prime minister, the corruption charges could come after him, that he did what he considered anybody else doing as a betrayal. He reached out to the Arab parties. He reached out to the Arab parties to try to create a coalition to stay the prime minister. When that didn't work, he went the other way, and he basically incited some Hamas. All the tensions that we saw in the past couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, the Al-Aqsa Mosque and
Yeah, it was basically a Likud Hamas cooperation for both of their elections, right? And Hamas needed tension with Israel to be able to defeat Fatah in the Palestinian election, and Likud and Netanyahu needed tensions with Hamas to remain in power in Israel. Hamas got what they want. Like, if you go and look at what the situation right now is in Palestinian, both in the West Bank and in Gaza Strip, Fatah is like finished. The support for Hamas has skyrocketed, and this is why Mahmoud Abbas doesn't want the elections, because he knows that like Hamas is going to take over. However, unfortunately for Netanyahu, the coalitions, like, it looked like it was going to work for Netanyahu as well, because the coalition was being built around him. And then when these attacks happened, there was one guy, I don't know, like one guy coming out of this coalition, once losing one seat would mean Netanyahu would stay in power. And it seemed like he was getting that one guy, but no, the coalition was built against him, and they managed to pull it off and they unseated him. Okay. And by the way, don't get confused. There's Mahmoud Abbas and there's Mansour Abbas. Okay.
Yeah.
So when we say Mahmoud Abbas, we're talking about the leader of Palestinians. The leader of Palestinians in the West Bank and the leader of the Fatah party. That's Mahmoud Abbas, right? When it comes to the Israeli coalition that has been built against Likud and now is the government of Israel, The Arab Party that is part of this coalition, that the leader of that is Mansour Abbas, not Mahmoud Abbas, Mansour Abbas. Let me see how many seats they have. What's the name of the party of these Islamists?
Four seats or five seats, something like that.
And that's amazing that you managed to get the name of the party Islamic is the Movement. United. No, it's called the United. Wait, isn't it? No, it's called the United Arab Seat, and in the Knesset they have four seats. Okay.
Yeah.
So four seats.
Oh my God! Right? I don't know how I remember these things.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So four seats from So the three main ones. Okay, the coalition is how many? Eight parties, right?
Eight parties. I think.
Yeah, but the three main ones are the Lapid guy, which his name is Lapid. The party is Yesh Atid. They have 17 seats. And the Yamina party with the head of Bennett being the head, that's seven seats. And then, which is now he's the prime minister. And then Mansour Abbas with the United Arab List, and they have four seats. Okay. So you might think, like, well, that doesn't add up to 61. Well, yeah, because they have a whole bunch of other parties, a lot of other smaller parties that is part of the coalition that manages to add up to 61. So the government has 61 seats. The opposition has 59 seats. So this is very interesting. So think about it. Bennett managed to get a great deal out of this, right? So when it comes to the government, the biggest party in the government is the Yesh Atid with the Lapid as the head of it. They have the 17 seats. But the party with the biggest seats, their head is not the prime minister. Okay.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Why? Why would Bennett, Yair Lapid?
Because that's what Bennett wanted, right? Yeah. Bennett was like, you know, I know I only have seven. I know I only have six seats. Yeah, six seats. But you need me. You can't. You know, you can't. Like, this is my condition. This is my condition. This is why if Yamina party, which is like a very, very far right, very racist, very anti-Arab party, like a lot of people will consider Bennett betraying his own party, right? Because they're like, why are you building a coalition with an Arab party? And he's like, because I get to be prime minister, that's why.
Well, I mean, Yair Lapid, like this guy has been, apparently he wants to move away from the whole ideological thing. He thinks that Israel's democratic institutions and Israel's democratic integrity has been under threat under Who, Bibi Netanyahu. No, Lapid. This is the way that he thinks. He thinks that it's a problem, and he thinks of it as an emergency. He's like, this is an existential emergency in Israel, where the very nature of Israel's democracy is under threat. So,
I mean, you can't blame him from saying that. Like, you have had like four elections in 2 years because of this goddamn Netanyahu that he doesn't want to let go of power for his own personal. Like, he's using the government of Israel as a personal shield against the courts, right?
Yeah, so, and he has like, look, there's one place where that whole comparison that that Friedman made is that, you know, whether you have in Israel, all the divides have gotten worse, right? There's Jews against Arabs has gotten worse. Secular against religious has gotten worse, right? The sort of mainstream secular Jews versus like the super religious Jews, like all of this stuff has been it's so divided. Israel is so divided. The populace is so divided that that's where. And then on top of that, you know, you have all of these issues going on with the Palestinians, right? Mm-hmm. And so he does really think of the political situation in Israel. Right. Lapid thinks of the political situation as in Israel as a threat to Israel's character as a democracy. So he has wanted to kind of move away from the ideological side and be a little bit more practical and make this deal. And he's like, whatever it takes, we just need to get rid of this guy. And if we have to build together a very diverse coalition, you know, it's super fragile, but also super diverse. And we have to do that to show that there is at least some united front. Right, and something stands for it, then fine, we'll do it. And I think that was his thinking behind actually letting Bennett go first, despite having four seats.
Here's the thing: here's what Netanyahu has to do now, okay? Because this is a coalition that this coalition will break apart if Netanyahu is not the part is not the head of Likud right now. So it's interesting because the greatest enemy of Netanyahu is now this coalition, but this coalition has a chance of survival because Netanyahu is still the head of Likud, and Netanyahu being the head of Likud is what this coalition needs to survive, because they are disagree on everything else. But so it's very interesting because Netanyahu is coming in and saying, I'm going to defeat this coalition, but no, Netanyahu, you staying in power is what this coalition needs to stay united, because you are what keeps them united.
Yeah.
Right. So that is very interesting, because it's like, I don't know, it's like, it's a circular thing. Like, Netanyahu is basically backfiring. Him trying to defeat this coalition is making this coalition stay in power. Another thing that has backfired on Netanyahu is very interesting is that this, because here's the thing. Netanyahu is often referred to as the magician, right? Because every time he seemed like he was losing power, he just pulled a trick out of the hat and just managed to figure out a very genius way to just remain in power, right? But his last trick was what basically finished him. The thing that he thought he would never do, and he would go after anybody that did, which is, again, reaching out to the Arab party to build a coalition. Even though eventually he let go of that and he tried different other strategies, the fact that he reached out opened the door to saying, like, okay, so that's okay now. You understand, Ali? Like, it didn't work out for him, but he, by the mere attempt at building a coalition with the Arabs and reaching out to them, he made it okay. Now it's not, because it was political before that. It was political suicide for any party, for any non-Arab party, to reach out to Arab parties to build a coalition. But by Netanyahu doing that, then it made it okay for everybody. So now these other parties were like, okay, so we're building coalitions with the Arabs now. Thank you for letting us know, Netanyahu. Let's build a coalition against you. So this backfired.
You don't think it would have happened anyway?
Anything is possible, but this was one of the biggest taboos in Israeli
politics. No, it's a huge taboo, but I think it's a huge taboo. This is the first time in Israeli history that an Arab party is part of the government. It's part of the government.
Which is pretty, like, here's the thing. As much as people keep saying, like, Israel, like, there's no racism in Israeli government, they have Arabs in their government. Okay, yeah, sure. Compared to many other racist countries, they're not that racist. But the mere fact that it's taboo, like, it's so taboo to build a coalition with the Arab party, right? Doesn't that, like, come off as, like, kind of racist?
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh my God, they're like, that's a fifth of the population. A fifth of Israel's population is Arab. So, like, this whole idea, the fact that it's actually taboo have them.
Are you counting the non-citizens as well?
No. Non-citizens, it's like 50%. But how many, like, Israeli Arabs?
No. Israeli Arabs are 50%? I don't know.
Israeli Arabs. What percentage are they?
I think it's 20%. Population?
Yeah, 20%. That's a fifth. I said
Okay.
Yeah, more than a fifth. Like, they're about 21%.
I thought you said 50%. I don't know. I was
No. My I said fault. More than a fifth of the Israeli population is Arab. So to think that more than one fifth of your population, right, is it's taboo to have them to be part of any kind of coalition or any kind of government
The comeback would be like, well, Armin and Ali, can you please not be freaking hypocrites and mention that these are not just Arab parties, these are the Muslim Brotherhood, like, these are Islamist parties, not just Arab parties.
They're not all like the one that's there right now, the four seats, the one that's part of the coalition just happens to be an Islamist party, okay? But that's not how it's been.
By the way, I do want to make it clear that, like, a lot of people, Muslim Brotherhood, like, yeah, you need to be worried about Muslim Brotherhood, but, like, we have Muslim Brotherhood, and then we have Muslim Brotherhood, okay? Like, I'm not saying that it's okay, like, they're all, some of them are okay, but some of them are not as bad as the other ones. Like, Muslim Brotherhood is, like, a huge umbrella term for a lot of different groups that are not sometimes connected anymore, right? Like, you could, you know, okay, so, like, Hamas is technically Muslim Brotherhood, and this Mansour Abbas is also technically Muslim Brotherhood, but we also have Muslim Brotherhood in Tunisia that is now, like, one of the major forces for, you know, modernization. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, like, I'm not defending Muslim Brotherhood, but I'm just saying, like, they're not at the same scale of scary when we say Muslim Brotherhood, right? So Hamas level Muslim Brotherhood is different from, like, when we talk about Mansour Abbas and his party. These are, like, yeah. So don't think, like, don't be like, ooh, boo-boo, like, oh, Muslim Brotherhood, they're gonna come to get you. Like, oh, now we have, like, be afraid. Like, no, like, it's not the same thing, right? Like, Muslim Brotherhood is an ideology that influenced a lot of different parties, like, in so many different ways. It's not like, oh, like, it's not a binary thing that if you're a Muslim Brotherhood, now you're, like, a radical group of people that just sees violence. In fact, you know, Muslim Brotherhood is an ideology that thinks that there's no contradiction between, it's a competition between Arab monarchs, Muslim Brotherhood types, and radical groups that, you know, like Al-Qaeda and Daesh. These are, when it comes to radical groups, and then you have al-Faqih in Iran, right? So Muslim Brotherhood thinks that there is no contradiction between Islam and the electoral process, right? Whether that's in Egypt or in Tunisia or in Gaza or in Israel, they think Islam doesn't contradict that. The monarchs hate the Muslim Brotherhood because they think they don't want to introduce the idea, normalize the idea of voting to the Arabs. So that's why Muslim Brotherhood is seen as a threat to Saudi Arabia or Egypt right now, or like Sisi types, or all the Gulf Arab states. And also the groups of Al-Qaeda or ISIS, they also see Muslim Brotherhood as a threat, because they don't want people to have any hope. They consider, like, the electoral process a Western invention, and this is Westernization. Like, this is not Islamic. This is, like, European. This is a European model that you guys are, well, you guys are supposed to be a Muslim group, and you're using a European model to govern. So they see them as hypocrites. So just to keep that in mind, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a very general term. So don't think, like, it's a binary. You know, you're completely radical if you're Muslim Brotherhood, and you're not if you're not part of that group, right? I mean, yeah. How radical? I mean, again, I'm not. It is a problem. This is an Islamist party, right? But the fact that they get, like, a Muslim Brotherhood party gets to have seats in Israel's Congress. I mean, how radical can they be? Yeah. Right. Like, I don't know. Like, Ali, do you think that's fair to say?
Listen, I don't know. I think all it is just about numbers. You need a coalition government. You've been trying for ages. You've had, like, a whole bunch of elections in the last, like, year or so. And you want, you need everything that you can get. And if you're four seats to power, and there's this party that has four seats, you're going to talk to them and you're going to see where you can land. I mean, that's really all it is. It's just numerical. I think it's just numerical. There's nothing ideological about this. There's nothing about, okay, well, you know, we're going to form a coalition with the Arab party. I think these Arab parties, it could be even worse, and they would have tried to form a coalition with them. Like, the opposition, Netanyahu, is that bad. It's that bad. Right? That's how bad it is. So...
So some people are saying, like, so what do you guys think about, like, is this more right, like, is this government going to be more right-leaning, less right-leaning? Like, oh my god, the prime minister is so extremely right-leaning, so what is this going to mean?
The prime minister's also got seven seats. I mean,
yeah, so again, yeah, exactly, like Ali mentioned, the fact that he's a prime minister doesn't mean that he's going to be able to get everything he wants, because he doesn't. He only has seven. I don't know. I keep saying six or seven. I don't know which one it is. It's either six or seven.
I think it's seven.
Yeah, on one page I'm seeing six, and on one other page I'm seeing seven. So I don't know which one it is. Let's say seven. So he only has seven seats. So as a government, whatever this government wants to do, the other parties need to agree, right? So some people are suggesting that this just means that they're not going to attempt anything new, or they're just going to keep the status quo and go on. Because if there's anything that would require change, then they're going to be an internal fight, right? So maybe the Arab Party, like what the Arab Party would request was some internal things within certain neighborhoods that the Arabs live in Israel, some things that are easy to give to Mansour Abbas to keep some Arabs in Israel happy, but nothing that it changes when it comes to foreign policy, nothing that it changes when it comes to the West Bank or the Gaza Strip. When it comes to unity against the Islamic Republic of Iran and being extremely against anything, and you know, anything that lets Iran get closer to nuclear power, or aggressively trying to dismantle Iran's you know, nuclear facilities, or any missile capabilities that they have, that's not going to change. In fact, they might want to signal a lot more strength against Iran, just to show that, like, because if they are not very aggressive against Islamic Republic of Iran, Netanyahu will be like, see, this is what you need me. So they might want to be very, show a lot of aggression, to make it clear, like, yeah, no, like, you don't need Netanyahu to get, like, security. We are going to be aggressive and, you know, maybe like, take out a nuclear facility just to make sure that this is not just Netanyahu that can do these kind of things. It's not, like, maybe, like, guys, while we're in power, like, let's just, like, do something in Iran. Like, just take out one, just to take a side. You'd be like, hey, we can play the same game. Don't worry, guys. We got you. Like, make some strong statements against the deal that is happening in Vienna right now. Like, yeah, shake your fist and be like, ah, this is bad. You know, just like some statements that Netanyahu would make. It's very interesting because when Bennett came out recently, because Netanyahu's English is a lot better than Bennett, right? And Bennett is like speaks mostly Hebrew. But when it came to making some aggressive statements about Iran and stuff, Bennett, like, spoke English, which is, like, not as in character for him as it is with Netanyahu, which was so obvious that this is, like, hey, the world, listen to what I have to say, right? Like, that was so interesting. So it's going to be very interesting to see when he speaks English, because when it comes to Netanyahu, he just speaks English all the time. But when it comes to Bennett, it's going to be noticeable when he decides to speak English instead of Hebrew. So that's going to be very fun to watch. But,
Yeah, I think what's going to be really interesting to watch is to see how they govern, because it's one thing to come together, like, from all kinds of different ideological factions against this guy that you don't like. And you wonder, like, well, okay, if Netanyahu's so bad for Likud, you know, why is he still staying there? Why does Likud still have him at the top? He's still their leader. It's because I think they're kind of waiting and watching. Like, where are they going to go from here? And that's a question. I mean, the title of this thing was, what next? Okay, Netanyahu's out, but what next? And now, what is next, Armin? Like, what happens from here? How do they govern? I mean, these people are all so all over the map with everything. What are they going to get done? The moment they try to govern and try to come together on something, what happens and how soon before it crumbles?
This is so fragile that we don't know what's going to happen. Okay, so Netanyahu is going to try to break this coalition as aggressively as he possibly can. There's so many external factors. It really depends on what happens with the corruption charges. Is it going to be a charge? Is it going to stick? Is it not going to stick? If the corruption charges don't go through, it might actually be the best thing for this coalition. Because having Netanyahu as a opposition is going to keep this coalition together, right? But again, this coalition is very fragile. It might be recommended to a good recommendation to this coalition might be, like, don't change anything that much. Like, just keep everything now, like, just introduce stability, everything that everybody is used to. Just go by that, okay? Go by that, right? And also, if Hamas does, by the way, we also saw that Hamas, like, just recently start burning some stuff with their balloons, right? Did you saw that, right?
Israel bombed Gaza after that.
I think that this coalition was like, thank you so much, Hamas, because we needed an opportunity to show that we don't take, we're not going to take this lying down. Like, we needed to make sure that we show that it's not just Netanyahu that strikes Hamas with the slightest amount of if you poke us, we're going to hit you back with giant missiles a lot. We wanted to make signal to Israel, like, it's not just Netanyahu. We could strike, we could, like, destroy Hamas. This is what I'm telling you guys. These people need Hamas, okay? They need Hamas. They need it as a, sending missiles to Gaza is like, hey, we got you, Israel. We are security. Netanyahu is not Mr. Security, the only Mr. Security. We could also be Mr. Security, okay? They send us balloons. We respond with missiles, just like Netanyahu. They want to say this is an illusion. The Netanyahu is like, Israel would be defenseless without me. Hamas is going to come and he's going to come and take all your wives and everything. We're going to become, it will be the end. It will be the end if I'm not the prime minister, right? This is the Netanyahu who wants to portray this image. So now we were like, nope, we can, look, we have, now we're in charge of the missiles. We could do the same thing. It's easy. Like, we just make a call, take a command, they send missiles. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And okay, so what is, so this is what's happening kind of internally. All right. What does this mean for the two-state solution or the Palestinians and everything that's happening? So you're talking about how they're trying to show that they're also, like, pro-security and everything. So we've got, let's look at these guys' positions. So, you know, Bennett, like the prime minister, and again, not that it really matters because it really comes down to how much representation you have in parliament. Right? He's very, very pro-settlements. He is against the creation of a Palestinian state. He does not want a Palestinian state, expressly said so. On the other hand, Yair Lapid has said, like, I think he said something like, you know, we're not saying that the Israelis and Palestinians should be married. You know, we're just saying that we want a good divorce settlement that both of us can live with, right? So he has that vision of a two-state solution, but he also wants a united Jerusalem. You know, he wants a lot of things that, you know, the Palestinians are not going to agree with, but he does want to talk with them. He does want to talk to the Palestinian Authority. So what happens here when it comes to the Israel-Palestine conflict with this coalition?
Well,
I mean, can any... Yeah.
No, I mean, the expectation, again, the expectation is does not necessarily mean this is going to happen, because it's Israel, right? Everything is, like, fragile, like, everything, here's the thing. We can guess, but our guesses are all going to be probably wrong, because things are extremely volatile right now, so anything goes. Like, we don't know what's going to happen next week, right? But the current expectation is that the effort is going to be to just go with the status quo, not change anything too much, because this is a coalition that disagrees with almost so many things that rocking the boat might break this coalition apart, right? So just, like, calmly move everything as they are. And again, the fact that this prime minister has the views that you mentioned, Ali, might not mean as much as a lot of people think, because he doesn't have a giant party to back him up, right? The more interesting thing, I don't know the answer to, Ali, I wonder what you think about it, is this: what are Arabs' impression of Mansour Abbas building a coalition with such an anti-Arab racist, like? Especially the tensions in the streets and, you know, in many cities in Israel between Arabs and Jews, and the animosity that it seems to exist, not just between Israelis and Palestinians, but Jews and Arabs within Israel itself. I mean, I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of Arabs both within Israel and within Palestine that consider this Arab party to be a traitor that is sitting with the enemies of you know, Muslims and Arabs and all that stuff, and the normalization of the existence of Israel and normalizations of having relationship with Israel. Like, I'm pretty sure that's like a lot of conversations that is happening that they consider. I bet you, like, there are a lot of Arabs within Israel and Palestine that hate this Mansour Abbas more than they hate a lot of other, than Netanyahu, because you know, sitting with the devil or something.
On the other hand, I mean, you have somebody. You know, you have someone like Netanyahu. You don't have any Arab representation. They don't really, really like the Arabs. Do not like him in general. So nobody likes him. Then on the other hand, you have somebody who they don't really see. I mean, Naftali Bennett. Are they going to see him as that different from Netanyahu? Like what Netanyahu has done over the last 12 years? They're not going to see him as super different from him. But with this guy, with Naftali Bennett as prime minister, you do have four Arabs in Israeli government for the very first time. Mm. Right. But, so there's, I mean, that's a trade. I'm not saying that all of them would necessarily think that way. It's a little bit of a trade off. They know, I mean, the trader aspect, I mean, they're already, I mean, these Arabs are already Israeli citizens, right? They're part of that. So do you want representation there? Do you want them part of the government with an asshole leader? Would you rather have, you know, another asshole leader who's just doing all this terrible stuff with no Arabs in government? You know, it comes down to that trade off. I think that everybody, it's like what Larry David said about compromise. You know what Larry David said about compromise?
What?
I mean, he said compromise is like when you have two people who compromise, it's basically defined as a situation where both people are at least 50% unhappy.
Yeah,
that's the definition of compromise. So you know, you just take that, you adjust the percentages, and that's why it's so fragile. I don't know. Like it's a very sort of, I feel like there's a lot of skepticism here. I don't think, you know, like Netanyahu said he's going to aggressively try to break up the coalition. I don't know if he's going to have to be that aggressive. I guess like everything's kind of hanging by a thread anyway. Because the question really does come down to how are they going to govern? Like if they have any kind of policy that they want to institute, like this ruling government right now, and they need a certain number of votes to get the stuff through, there's always going to be, you know, you just need to be one or two or three votes out and it fails. Right?
Yeah, that's what I said. I do want to mention that because some people might be confused, is that when you're saying the first time in the government, what you mean by the government is like
the ruling coalition.
The ruling coalition, because a lot of people like
not
the Knesset, right? So when you refer to the government, we're talking about like sometimes government, you're talking about all the whole system as a whole. That's what sometimes when we mention government, that's what we refer to. So the Arabs had a party in the Knesset for as long as I can remember.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, but when it comes to when we're saying the government right now, we're talking about the prime minister and his governing coalition and all.
Yeah,
that. That's the first time the Arab parties are in the government.
Yeah, right? that's what I meant. I should have been clear. Yeah, it's in the ruling coalition.
No. That is clear because that's technically when we say government, that's what we should be referring to, not the whole thing. So that is the correct way of referring to it. So, but some people might be confused. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the whole thing. The whole thing is. Some,
yeah.
Go ahead.
There are some comments and questions I want to highlight in the live chat.
Okay, let's go through that. And we've got like 13 minutes. I mean, it's going to be... the music guy is saying, I wasn't expecting him to be kicked. So I was surprised.
It's very interesting that people are so used to Netanyahu because, I mean, he's been in power for how long? Like as prime minister for how long? Like
12 years.
Or 15 years?
12 years.
12 years? People are so used to it. Like, it's very interesting because other countries, when they change their president or prime minister, people are like, yeah, of course it changes. But in Israel, people are just like, what? Israel with that Netanyahu? Like, it's so, it's like, they're not used to it.
Well, I mean, he was once before, wasn't he?
Hmm?
So,
yeah.
He was,
yeah, that's why I think it's a total of 50.
Yeah, it's a total of 50. You're right. But total of 50. Continuously, I mean, it's been 12 years. His latest reign was 12 years. But then in the 90s, he was prime minister for 3 years at one point. So, yeah, 15 total.
Susanna, read that.
Uh-huh. Okay, hold on. Let me get back to the thing. Susanna saying, I don't think current America could survive a coalition government. It's, you know, you never know. I look, the U.S., you've got the two-party system. It's really hard to imagine. Like, this is one of those what-if scenarios. What if the U.S. totally changed to a parliamentary system? I don't know. I don't know how that would look. It could. I mean, usually what happens in the U.S., I mean, it would probably be similar to Canada. I think Canada is a similar example where in the U.S., like the vast majority of people of the U.S. is the population is liberal, right? It's Democrat leaning. I mean, they right. just are. That's why the Republicans have to rely so much on these sort of non-democratic aspects of the, like the Supreme Court, the Electoral College, you know, the misrepresentative Senate. They have to rely on that to win elections and, you know, these sort of justices.
I mean, for the Americans listening to this, coalition governments are not as dysfunctional as it is in Israel, okay? Maybe some Americans are looking at Israel like, oh my God, maybe we should keep a two-party system. Maybe this is a good thing. Like, look at this mess that they have to deal with. Like, can they, like, honestly, like, some people are like, are you guys, like, in the United States, when there's elections or in other countries, people are like, oh my God, this is so distracting. People, instead of governing and helping people, like they're doing campaigns. So if and spending so much energy at PR and marketing and all that, instead of actually doing things that makes the country better. But imagine now Israel has gone through four of that in 2 years. Like, this is why people are like, this is breaking the country. Like, stop it. Just stop it. Or Israel, just stop it and get back. Like, guys, Israel is not just about foreign policy, okay? Israel is not just about, like, Iran, a relationship with Iran or the Palestinian conflict. Israel is also about dealing with, like, the pandemic and economy and education and roads and, like, income and, like, women rights. And
it's,
like,
it's a country. It's a normal country with people in it.
And the fact that they have to deal with elections, the fact that this is the country is like so dysfunctional when it comes to the way that the politics works right now is like not letting them move forward, right? This is not a healthy way to govern a country, right? So, but Americans, if you're watching this and you're like so happy that you're two parties, like, no, there's a middle ground. Look at Canada, like, look at Canada, right? Like, there are ways to keep stability and have coalitions and have more than just two goddamn parties, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Okay, music guy saying, thank you for breaking this down. I'm not familiar with any of this. I don't blame you, man. I mean, this is not the Israel-Palestine thing is just not an easy thing to follow because, like, this. There's so many moving parts. It's just the whole thing is just a nightmare. It's been a nightmare for ages and ages and ages.
Okay, I'm seeing somebody spreading conspiracy theories in the live chat. I have to address this. Alex is saying Australia has a coalition government. This is I refuse to accept conspiracies. Australia is not real. Australia does not exist. Please stop spreading lies in the live chat.
It never happened. Lois is asking. So yeah, this is okay. So this I don't know the answer to, Armin. I don't know if you do, Lois. Good question. Can Netanyahu be tried in court while he is leader of the opposition? I would figure probably yes. I mean, I think that was one of the primary purposes.
No, yes. Of doing this, right? I mean, this is the whole point of him trying to stay up as prime minister, right? Because that was what he needed not to get charged. Well, will he get charged? We don't know. Honestly, like. If once you get into like what is the legal corruption case and what are the details behind that and what are his chances of getting, you know, charged or anything like that, where is it going to go? Like, this is like we need a legal expert, not a legal expert, not just any legal expert, a legal expert that understands Israeli laws and is followed the cases. Like, this is gets way too nuanced for that, right? So we don't know what's going to happen, but yes, technically he can get charged as the leader of the opposition, and that's why he wanted to remain prime minister, because if he could, if being the leader of opposition was him was enough for him not to get charged, then he wouldn't be holding he wouldn't be leaving that office like kicking and screaming like this, right? Like, this the whole point of it was for him not to get charged, right? Anyways, there we go. Look at this one.
Okay. So here is, would Arab countries see Israel any different now that this Arab party is a part of the government?
Arab countries have already moved forward. Like, okay, which Arab countries are you talking about? Because I think like a lot of Gulf Arab, like if you're talking about Saudi, first of all, are you talking about people or the government? And are you, which depends, which Arab countries you're talking about, and are you talking about the people or government, okay? Because certain Arab countries have moved forward to building relationships with Israel before any of this. So I don't know what you're specifically you're referring to, because maybe, okay, so I'm actually, here's a good, actually, let me spin your question to make it very interesting, actually, music guy. This could be a very good question, because what you could be suggesting is that the Arab countries that have shown that, send a signal that we're okay to build a relationship with Israel because we're so afraid of the Islamic Republic of Iran that we need to unite against the Islamic Republic of Iran with Israel, right? They have gotten a lot of backlash, obviously, from their own people for normalizing ties with Israel, right? However, this could be a boost to their image because, like, look, even the Arabs in Israel are building relationship with Israel, like with the Israeli government. They have, like, why are you blaming us? Like, everybody is doing this, right? Everybody's doing this. You know, like, forget the policy. Like, everybody, here's the thing. People are basically saying, damn the Palestinian cause. Just because we're Arabs doesn't mean that we have to support every other Arab. Like, we have to think about our own interests. And some people might suggest that, you know, Israeli Arabs, as much as we see them supporting Palestinian Arabs, there are some, you know, I don't know how big or how small, but there are some people within there are some Arab Israelis that were like, you know, there are things that matter to us living in Israel, that us constantly championing the Palestinian cause is standing in the way of us pushing for things that matter to us living in Israel. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if we constantly want to be the champions of the Palestinian cause, we're not being the champions of Arabs living in Israel. And this is such a taboo thing to suggest, but there are indirect way of signals that is something that some Arabs want. Like, look, we want more security. We want our rights to be respected in Israel. Maybe, like, and look, these Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Sudan, these other countries, they're like, they could prosper by not being champions of the Palestinian cause. We in Israel, we could do that same thing. Like, you know, I mean, this is a lost war. Like, you know, that's what they say, right? But this also leaves the opportunity for countries like Iran or the Islamic Republic of Iran or Turkey to come and be like, look, everybody is leaving the Palestinian cause. The Arabs, they're not going to fight for the Palestinian cause. This is why you need us. Right? And then the Turkey and Iran are going to compete with each other over that, right? But here's another thing. If all these Arab countries, a lot of these Arab countries, including maybe, I don't know, like maybe in the 2 decades or so, even Arabs in Israel, abandon the Palestinian cause, if we like slowly move towards that direction, then it's going to be hard to consider, like, the right-leaning parties in Israel needs to portray the idea that Israel is under an existential threat at all times, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can't get that from Palestine because you can see that they don't have a chance, then that will motivate them to shift the focus on a country, on the Islamic Republic of Iran. Because you do need, these parties do require a threat to be Mr. Security and gather votes like that. If you like the imbalance between the power that the Israeli state has and the Palestinian has is so much that you can't sell the idea that Hamas is a threat to Israel anymore, right? But you need a threat to be Mr. Security, and that's when the Islamic Republic of Iran comes in.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, Susanna's saying great show. And yeah, we're actually coming up to the end of it. I mean, we're just under an hour. I think that we're coming up to an hour. Yes. So yeah, we're going to see more of this. I'm very, I don't know, just overall, Armin, last prediction. Do you think that this coalition stays together over the next 2 years? Do you think that Yair Lapid gets to see his part as prime minister? Or do you think that it crumbles before then?
I don't know. I think it really depends on the corruption charges on Netanyahu and how successful they're going to be. Also depends on any major conflicts, whether they happen or not. What happens with Iran? What's happening in Vienna? Are there going to be major tensions with Hamas? Are there going to be major tensions with the Islamic Republic of Iran? Is there going to be a wave of another wave when it comes to the pandemic in Israel, and how do people see this coalition's response to that if that happens? International relationships with the United States, because Netanyahu also portrays himself as somebody that could basically bend the United States government to its will, right?
Which he can.
Yeah, so basically Netanyahu is that's what Netanyahu can do. But Netanyahu might think like, look, this coalition is what Biden loves, because this is a gift to Biden, right? Because Biden is like, yeah, you guys are not going to be able to push me the way within my country, the way Netanyahu did. So you guys have to chill out when it comes to our negotiations with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and maybe not be such a stop, like, maybe like do, yeah, basically Biden, this was a gift to Biden, and Netanyahu would want to make that point. Like, look, the relationship that Israel has with the United States is not going to be the same in this coalition. So another thing that depends is this coalition going to be able to show that, no, look, this United States is still going to support us? Because I would suggest Biden, if Biden wants this coalition to be stay alive, Biden should do something. I mean, you see that Biden made an immediate call on congressional, so that was a good thing to see, to show that Biden was supporting this coalition. Because when it came to Netanyahu, he didn't call him for weeks after he came to power, right? So that was kind of dissing him, like, publicly. But when it came to this coalition, Biden, I think, would be smart if they want Netanyahu not to come back to power, it would be smart of them to cooperate even more with this coalition to keep it alive, to show to the Israeli people, like, look, this coalition is capable of getting U.S. support, and that's why you don't need Netanyahu. All the things that you thought you need Netanyahu for, we have it, right? But when it comes to, so there's a lot of pessimism, by the way, because a lot of things we expect to be status quo. However, I want to be cautiously optimistic about one thing. I know that this Mansour Abbas is like a Islamist party and blah blah blah, Muslim Brotherhood and all, but even if this coalition breaks apart, whether it stays or breaks apart, the normalizations of the Arabs having politicians that sit in the government, I'm hoping that this whole moving towards making Israel into an ethnostate, I'm hoping that this breaks that, right? I'm hoping that 10 years from now, we look back at this and we see this was the beginning of Israel becoming a country for Arabs and Jews. Not a country for the Jews, not a Jewish state. This was the beginning of a movement that made Arabs feel more and more that they have this government in Israel represents them and their interests as well, right? I don't know if this is the beginning of that. I'm hoping that that's where we're going to get. That will do something with for the Palestinian cause as well, if we have more farther governments down the road where Arabs have a say in policies than they have right now. I'm hoping it will mean that things will change with the Palestinians, with the Gaza Strip, and so this could be the beginning of that. So again, I don't want to be too naive to be optimistic. No. I will be.
Yeah, I was like, this is a pretty.
I want to be just cautiously optimistic. Okay, don't.
Let's see if it holds together. We'll take your bets. Music guy saying good stream, very informative. Thank you. You're very welcome, and thank you. Thank you
for
all
being
of
here.
You for listening. If you like what you hear here, go to patreon.com/sjme. Please consider becoming a patron. You can do that for as little as $1 a month, and you will get 5 or 6 live streams every month. You'll get to be able to participate in them. If you want to ask your questions ahead of time as a patron, you can go onto the posts in Patreon before right when they're posted. And if you can't attend the live stream live, you can ask your questions over there, and then you will be the first ones to be addressed. Your questions will be the first ones answered when we actually do the live stream. And of course, you know, you're welcome to join the live streams whenever they happen, and then ask your questions and comment and do that here too. Twice a month, we do our Q&As where you guys can come in and just ask me and Armin anything you want to about anything, except for stuff that'll get us banned on YouTube, right, Armin?
Yes, exactly.
Except for those kinds of things. And we'll let you know. Armin will be very clear in letting you know what those things are. So,
try.
Right. So, we've got those Q&A sessions. There's a lot of fun stuff here. There's a lot of interesting things that are happening in the world. Unfortunately, mainstream media is not covering a lot of it. You're not hearing about the Iranian elections as much as you should. You're not hearing about this fallout after the Israeli. You really aren't. Not in the mainstream English media. Mm. You're not.
Well, you're hearing it, but they're not giving you as much as detail as... But the thing is that I cannot expect them not to give... Because if they give them as much detail as we give in these shows, they're going to scare away their audience, right? Like,
Pre-2016, you used to have a lot more coverage of this stuff in the English, American mainstream media of mm-hmm. internationally what was going on. I mean, people were all over it. Now,
but I don't want to completely dismiss the mainstream media because, for example, I watched CNN and Al Jazeera's coverage of Iranian election, right? And they were like not as detailed, but like there was nothing like it was pretty accurate, you know what I mean? Like,
don't say that, it's just you don't have a lot of so what I'm saying is like what you're going to hear here is actually a lot detail of what's happening around the world. You're going to hear a lot more detail. I hear a lot of analysis. I mean, Armin obviously is like he's very in touch with people who are on the ground in Iran, like activists who other people don't usually
care from. Yeah, if you speak Persian, come watch our Persian shows. We cover everything in Persian.
They've got, the
Jumhuriya Bikhodayan. If you speak Persian, that's a channel that we cover this. Yeah.
Speaking of which, if you're a patron and you're listening to this 2 days from now, day after tomorrow, mm-hmm. in the evening, we are going to be talking about the aftermath of the Iranian quote-unquote election.
Yes,
if you want
thank
to call
you,
it
Ellie.
The election.
Yes, right. Beautiful. Good job.
Yeah, Ellie. So
I'm proud.
I've learned something from listening to you. So anyway, so we're gonna do that. So we'll see you guys Wednesday night. But thank you for joining us, and super, super appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care.
Guys.
Be best.
Thank you for being, be best, time. Everyone, and thank you for being patrons.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends, write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions, or head over to secularjihadist.com and give $1 or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you.